Hi, and welcome to episode 98 of the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In today's episode, I'm on my own talking about some of my favourite books that I read over the summer holidays that have just passed here. There's a pretty big range in the breadth of books that I read, but the ones I talk about in today's episode are all ones with a focus on creative inspiration in one way or another. Some relate directly to art, some to interiors and women, some are on Eastern approaches to painting, and one is soulfully reflective. I've listed all of them in the show notes with links so you can get a closer look if you'd like to know more. I really hope you enjoy my nerdy little deep dive into my favourite current books that are floating my creative boat. I'm Suze Nethercutt, and this is the Studio Insider Art Podcast, where I open up about what it's really like to be a professional artist. Whether I'm having chats with my studio bestie Steph, interviewing inspiring creatives, or answering listener questions, there's something here for every established and emerging artist. My mission is that my journey will help you feel a bit more at home in your own. Hey there, guys, it's Suze here, and welcome to the podcast. I'm on my own today. I've just been recovering from COVID the last few weeks and haven't actually had a voice that I could even record interviews with people. So I might be a bit croaky today, but you know why, is because I'm recovering from that barking cough that comes along with having that delightful virus. Anyway, I'm feeling much better, and I thought today it might be fun to share with you some of my summer reading. I am an avid reader. I read pretty much every day, and definitely at night, and a lot through the holidays. My ideal summer holiday is actually just to sit quietly somewhere in nature and read a book. And we did a lot of that on the beach this year and on the front veranda. And I actually did a lot of it while I had COVID as well. So I was looking at the stack of books that I've worked my way through this summer and thought, there are so many juicy ones here that I really want you guys to know about. So I'm going to share a few of them with you. So I think I've selected seven today that I'm going to chat about. And the first one that I have here is an absolutely gorgeous book to look at. In fact, most of the ones that I'm going to share with you today are really beautiful books to look at. And it was one that ran out of copies, and I couldn't get a copy of it for quite a long time, and it was reprinted recently. I think in December it was released again. So I quickly nabbed a copy because it is so lush. And it is a beautiful book called Petal by the artist Adriana Picker. And it features her illustrations of flowers. So for obvious reasons, I absolutely loved looking at this book, but it also is accompanied by a text. And I think that might actually be by, yes, it is. It's by a different author, Nina Rosso. It's a book by Hardy Grant Books, who make absolutely gorgeous books. And so what it is it works through a lot of the different families of flowers, and there's a little write-up in each of them about the history of those flowers and the families of flowers that you might not even realize were related. Well, I certainly didn't. A lot of the stories are quite bizarre and surprising, and it was just an altogether fascinating read. But the other reason I wanted to buy it was because it gives a really beautiful look into Adriana Picker's style. So she paints absolutely gorgeous illustrations of flowers. It's a very modern approach. They're always on a bright coloured background. They look like watercolours, but I think she predominantly creates them on iPad with an Apple Pencil. But they are just absolutely sublime and stunning. The angles that she captures, the colours that she captures, the way that she paints the variegation in different petals, they're just absolutely beautiful illustrations and endlessly inspirational for me. So I've had this out on many occasions while I've been working, just to get like little snippets of colour inspiration, or wanting to depict a flower on an interesting angle and just seeing if there's any clues or hints in there. there. I mean, it's lovely always to work from live flowers if you have them from the in the studio, but sometimes we don't have access to them. So I have a few different books like this by photographers and artists that just give me something to look at and reference when I'm feeling like I need that inspiration. But I think one of the things that I find most inspirational about Adriana Picker's book is her use of colour. She is a sublime colourist. And as many of you would know, if you're familiar with my art, that is a huge area of interest and passion for me. So check that out. If you see it, grab it, because it ran out of copies in the last print that they did a couple of years ago when it first came out. So it's called Petal and it's by Adriana Picker. And she's an Australian artist too. I think she now lives in New York, but is from Sydney originally, I believe. So the full title is Petal, The World of Flowers Through an Artist's Eye. Gorgeous. Okay. The next one I want to chat to you about is one that I'm currently reading. I haven't actually finished it yet. And look, it's not normally a book that I would pick up because it is about David Hockney, who I have seen his art. I've seen a major retrospective of his, which was at the National Gallery of Victoria a few years ago here in Australia. And it was a fascinating exhibition and it featured a lot of his portrait work and also some of his work on creating landscapes on iPad. And it was fascinating to see, but I can't say that he is an artist that I've ever hugely resonated with. So I picked up this book and was actually largely inspired by the title when I was at the bookstore and it really intrigued me. So I got reading the blurb and then I realized it was actually going to be a really interesting read. And it is called Spring Cannot Be Cancelled, David Hockney in Normandy. And it's by Martin Gayford and David Hockney. It's a bit of a collaborative book. And what it's about is the period of time that David Hockney spent in lockdown in a house that he bought in Normandy in France. So he moved in there just before the lockdowns happened in 2020. And he really wanted to spend quality time in this garden and paint the spring coming in over several years, paint all the seasons, paint the same landscapes, tracking the different phases of the seasons with this particular landscape that he was confined to. So I think it was a project that he was kind of going to do anyway, because he's now 80. So he is kind of in that time of life where he talks about this in the book, where he's kind of ready to settle down and chill out and not, you know, race around the globe quite so much. And so this book is, it's the way it's written is really interesting. It includes a lot of back and forward dialogue from emails between Martin Gayford, who's the co-author, and David Hockney. So the elements that are David Hockney are drawn from those emails. And Martin Gayford will often put a response from one of his emails. So it appears like a dialogue between the two of them. But then it'll break off with Martin Gayford sort of going off into different regions of art history and kind of expanding on the themes that David Hockney's talking about that he's exploring in his work. And I've absolutely loved this book. It's been really fascinating and it's kind of made me fall a little bit in love with David Hockney, because I love how he speaks and the artwork that he creates inspired by the landscape that he is intensely observing and living in throughout that period of time. And there's lots of art historical references throughout the book. For example, talks a lot about Monet and Monet's garden that he built in Giverny in France and the relationship that he had with his garden. And, you know, he spent basically the last 20 years of his life painting that garden and, you know, his famous water lilies that hang in the Laurangerie in Paris, which are absolutely gobsmackingly beautiful. But he intensely observed his own environment and his own garden for a huge portion of his life. And the mastery in those paintings is so much a result of that intense observation. So David Hockney talks a lot about observation of his surroundings and deep observation of nature or whatever subject that you're creating as an artist. And it's been an absolutely fascinating read. I've completely loved it. I haven't quite finished it yet, but I highly recommend it. It was a very easy read. It is actually illustrated all the way through. It is called Spring Cannot Be Cancelled by David Hockney and Martin Gayford, and it is published by Thames and Hudson. And that one's a pretty new release, so I'm thinking that one will be very readily available. And I'll of course link to all of these in the show notes as well, so that you guys can find them if you want to explore them. But yeah, that's a great one if you're a bit of an art historical nerd or love making those connections between the way that you create as an artist and how that has occurred through various artists' experience and expression throughout history, which is a huge interest of mine as a with that art history background. So I love that one. Something a little bit different, well, a lot different actually, but no less absolutely gorgeous. So another book that I have read over summer, which has just been an absolute delight, is by Meredith Gaston. She is an Australian author and illustrator, and I think she's created something like 9 or 10 books. She's been quite prolific, especially in recent years. Well, I think probably for quite a while, actually. And her latest release is called Choosing Love. And this book, and in fact all of her books, are completely different to the others that I've been describing to you, in that she takes a theme, a very large philosophical, spiritual theme for each of her books, and she explores them in depth and accompanies them with really beautiful, lighthearted, colourful watercolour illustrations. And look, I've known of Meredith's work for many years, and in fact, I think I bought one of her very first books, 101 Moments of Joy and Inspiration, many years ago, and I've had it on my shelf and adored it. But I hadn't purchased any others until lockdown, one of the many lockdowns that happened last year. I remember one night I was at Kmart with my kids. We were picking up a few last bits and bobs because we knew we were going back into lockdown. They needed shoes, etc. And I was in the book section. I thought, oh, I'm going to pick up a few books if there's anything there, because I know that we're going to be in for a while. And I literally just grabbed all of her books off the shelf and put them in my basket and brought them home. And I proceeded to read them gradually over the coming months. And the experience of reading Meredith's books was extraordinary for me. I felt like each of them were a beautiful transmission to my heart of love and hope and joy at a time when I think we all needed that. But I felt that transmission through her words and through her images in such a pure way that I can completely relate to as an artist, because it's the way that art that is really powerful touches me often. But I don't often have this experience with a book in quite the way that I had with her books. So I have since read all of them, and over summer I read the latest one, Choosing Love. And so what it is called is Choosing Love, Living Our Lives to Nourish Our Hearts. How beautiful is that? And it is published, I think it's Hardy Grant. And her books are just sublime. And her artwork that she illustrates all of her books with is so uniquely her own, and a pure and beautiful expression that even on its own you can appreciate the beauty of what she's created there. It's very lighthearted, almost naive style art, but accompanied with the words, it looks deceptively simple, but when you experience the words with the artwork, the effect of it is so beautiful and goes straight to your heart, that I think there's something very special to learn from reading this book for artists in particular, because of the way it can touch you. And they're just so beautiful. So Choosing Love has each chapter is based around a different concept of how we can choose love in our lives, through our relationships, through feeling love, through well-being, through self-care, through having courage, through all kinds of aspects of ways that we can choose love in our lives. And she's very much about being mindful and present to the daily opportunity we have to really fully embrace life and love life. And that by just through a few simple shifts in the way that we experience how we're living, such as how we take care of our bodies and the thoughts that we choose to have, that it can make a profound difference on how well we feel and how happy we are. So absolutely gorgeous book. I love her work. Hey guys, are you loving what you're hearing on the podcast and craving a bit more from my studio? Then consider checking out my e-course trilogy, Painting as a Practice, playful classes in mixed media painting designed to nurture your authentic style. If you're a beginner painter or seeking some fresh new approaches in your art, then check out Chapter 1, Laying Solid Foundations. Or if you'd like to learn more about my ways with colour and mixed media art supplies, then Chapter 2 is a great option. And if you're seeking to really hone your creative style or learn how to create a series of larger works on canvas, then Chapter 3 is a brilliant option. Each chapter is just $77 each, or you can pick up the discounted bundle of all three courses for just $219. To learn more, be sure to head on over to the link in the show notes or susannethicottstudio.com/online-classes. I'll see you soon. Okay, another one, very different again, because I love variety in my reading. I picked this up in my local bookshop just before Christmas. This is a monograph about, so a monograph is a really big fat book that usually studies the life of an artist. And this one is on Ken Doane, and it is a fairly recent publication, I believe. I think it's a Thames and Hudson, yes. It is Ken Doane, Art, Design, Life by Amber Cresswell Bell. And so any Australians out there listening to this podcast will know who Ken Doane is, because he's kind of iconically Australian and was absolutely massive throughout the 80s. A lot of his work was front and center on Expo 88 for anyone who's old enough out there to remember that big event that happened in Australia in the 80s. And then his work just became hugely popular in the fashion industry and generally in the surface design world. And I didn't know this aspect, but he has been and continues to be absolutely massively popular in Japan and had huge success in Japan. So I thought, you know, and I kind of grew up with Ken Doane, and because it was so saturated in our environment as children, and when I came up through the 90s and noughties as a fashion designer, I was a little bit anti-colour, which is so ironic considering the kind of work that I create these days. So I didn't really like his work that much. But I noticed when I was in the bookstore looking at this book that I'm seeing his work with completely new eyes and new appreciation because of the directions that I've moved in creatively over the years. And I thought, you know, I really need to learn more about Ken Doane and really get to know his work. So I bought the book and I read it because I am a complete nerd and I read monographs from cover to cover. And so he lives in Sydney and has done for his whole life and lives right on the shoreline. I think he lives in a place called Chinaman's Beach. So he can walk down to the beach in Sydney from his home, and has painted that environment of Sydney his whole life. And that's the work that he's best known for, is the way that he has painted Sydney. And his relationship with his environment is just so beautiful and so present in his work. And he paints in incredibly beautiful, vibrant colors. He's a master colorist. But the thing that I found really fascinating is the way that Ken Doane he hasn't quite sat in the fine art world, but he has had a huge presence in the design world. And people can be a little bit snobby about Kendone and not relate to him as a real artist in inverted commas, because he's never fit the mold of the classic fine artist who presents in galleries and operates within that whole system, even though he has exhibited widely in a number of incredible galleries in Sydney. But he had his first exhibition, I think he was either just about 40 or 40, which I love because I sort of came to painting around that age as well after a career in fashion. And his prior career had been in advertising. So he had a really good grasp on the zeitgeist of his time because he was working in an industry that required that of him. But he had gone to art school prior to doing that. And had worked on a lot of different campaigns as a creative director before he finally had his first exhibition, which I can't remember when that was. Might have been late 70s, early 80s. I can't remember. Anyway, the fascinating part about his story is the way that he did get critical acclaim in galleries and had a number of very successful exhibitions and ended up opening his own gallery in the Rocks in Sydney and started retailing his own art, but also T-shirts. He created an iconic T-shirt that he literally sat outside of his design space because he'd sort of used the gallery as part gallery shop and design studio for freelance advertising work. And it just really took off. There was a huge public response to his style of art, which is very, again, sort of naive in the way that it takes subjects and simplifies them, quite abstracted, but incredibly beautiful and a total master of colour. So because he came from that commercial background, he totally saw the opportunities for his artwork in the surface design world. And so he began creating a whole range of different products, particularly clothing, and in partnership with his wife, whose name I can't quite recall. I'm sorry, I should have written that down before I jumped on recording. She was the designer of a fashion label that they created together, and they had an enormously successful multi-million dollar business that was right across the planet. And was retailed in like Olivia Newton-John's store, Koala Blue, that was in LA. There was a huge response to it. Alongside that, he was also enormously popular in Japan. And he was picked up by a magazine in Japan and has done their cover for decades, literally. I think it's a monthly cover of their magazine. And within this book, all of the covers are depicted and they're absolutely brilliant. But he's had numerous solo exhibitions in Japan. They really understand and embrace the way that he works and his grasp on colour, and just he really has resonated with the Japanese art community. So Kendone is, I think, regarded now a bit differently to how he was probably in the 80s, when most people knew him as a fashion label, as a product that was available everywhere. They licensed the designs to Sheridan, which is a bedding company, and all kinds of huge fashion companies. So my experience of Kendone from that time has shifted hugely through reading this book and understanding the full scope of his work and what he created. So an absolutely fascinating read. I think a fabulous read for anyone that's really interested in colour and is a painter in colour and is interested in surface design. I had the thought on numerous occasions as I was reading this book that what he did is basically what Gorman does today, which is an Australian fashion label that often works with artists to create garments from fine art. So Kendone, The Art and Art Design Life by Amber Cresswell Bell, a brilliant book. Okay, and moving on to a different one again. This one I read late last year. And it is an absolutely gorgeous book that I saw on Instagram, and I made a mental note to myself, I've got to hunt down this book because it looks absolutely gorgeous. It has a really beautiful cover. And then I was chatting to another one of the mums at school and found out just in conversation that the woman that wrote and photographed this book is actually her sister and grew up here in Ballarat. So that was just a little interesting factoid. But I went and grabbed the book. It is called A Room of Her Own, Inside the Homes and Lives of Creative Women, and it's by Robin Lee. And this one is also a Thames and Hudson. So most of the books that I'm talking about today are all big, beautiful, colourful, illustrated books, which I love to have. And this is such a fascinating read. I mean, who doesn't love to go into an artist space and explore and see the inner sanctum of the places where really talented creative people create? And that's basically what this book is. So Robin Lee is a photographer. She takes absolutely gorgeous photos. She, as I mentioned, is Australian, but she's lived extensively overseas. And what she has done in this book is located the homes of really interesting homes and studios of really interesting creative women throughout the world, and has gone and photographed their home or the space that they work in, whatever was most relevant for her, and has interviewed them and written about them. And these are not run-of-the-mill, uber famous people. They're all people that are seriously interesting, have really rich backgrounds, have a variety of different creative practices. Some of them are artists, some of them are heiresses of, ancient Italian lines, just such a huge variety of creative women. And the photos are absolutely gobsmackingly beautiful, and the stories are fascinating. And most of the women are just so accomplished and have created incredible, you know, creative practices in whatever field they are in their life. And then you get to see how they have expressed that through their own home or their studio and the way that they've presented it. So it's an absolute visual feast, an endlessly fascinating book, looking at the lives and what drives these women who have created absolutely beautiful homes and environments for themselves. So that one is a real treat, and particularly for anyone who has a bit of an interest in interiors as well. So that is A Room of Her Own, Inside the Homes and Lives of Creative Women by Robin Lee, and that is a Thames and Hudson book. Okay, and the last one on my list is completely different again, because I have huge variety in what I read. I'm holding in my hand The Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, and this one is a translation by Stephen Mitchell. And this is over 2,000 years old, this particular piece of philosophy that was written in China. And it's a philosophy about life. And it's, you know, if anyone that's had an interest in spirituality or philosophy has probably heard of the Tao Te Ching. But the reason that I have been reading it, and I've actually read this, it's not huge, but it's huge in terms of the thought forms and philosophies and that it contains. Like, it can do a lot of thinking around this book. It's almost letting it wash over you in the way that poetry would, in that each time you read it, it evokes something different from what you're hearing, from what you're reading, or rather, I should say. So I've actually read this and picked it up multiple times over the last year, actually, since I've been creating my Be Like Water e-course, which will be coming out in the next month or two, because there's some beautiful passages in the Tao Te Ching about water and how water in many ways is the wisest of the elements to relate to in the way that you live your life. And within the Tao Te Ching, I'm gonna not speak about it as eloquently, of course, as it does in the book, because it's an absolute masterpiece of philosophy and literature. But what I've drawn from this book and the way that I keep returning to it and relating to it is around my relationship with art making and also the making of my own life, because I believe that as artists, we have such a tremendous opportunity to create the most beautiful lives. And within watercolor and the way that I approach watercolor and my art in general, I really try to embrace the philosophies that are present in the Tao Te Ching in terms of, you've heard Steph and I talk numerous times about following flow and being really present with what's going on in our life and following those opportunities that life gives us and allowing them to help direct us and riding the flow of that, but also riding the flow of what we feel most drawn to at any particular time, and how central that is to both mine and Steph's art practice, actually, and the way that we both approach life. And that is very much something that the Tao Te Ching talks about, is that notion of following flow, but also other elements around water, which it's so fluid and it can fit around anything and relate to whatever object it's in and completely change its shape according to whatever environment it inhabits in a very non-invasive way. It just trickles in. But also how the nature of water in relation to a cliff face next to the ocean, for example, it's so strong that it can actually wear away rock, but it's so soft that it can slip through your fingers. So it's this incredible element that I've contemplated deeply as I've been creating the Be Like Water e-course, because I feel like watercolor as a medium gives us such an opportunity to be totally present with the opportunities that the medium gives us, pigment and water, and allowing us to explore the flow of what can occur on the page when we play with it, is something that I've explored a lot throughout the last 2 years, actually. So I've continued to return to the Tao Te Ching because there's just so much there, and it's an absolutely beautiful book that I believe everyone should have on their shelf. And the other thing that it's led me to is exploring how Eastern traditions have approached art, particularly the Chinese and the Japanese, through their ink painting. And also they both have watercolor traditions as well that come a bit later. But their whole attitude to artwork and painting, I've read quite a few books about those. A couple in particular that I've really loved that I've read this summer are The Way of the Brush, Painting Techniques of China and Japan by Fritz Van Brisene, which is a kind of a technical look at the painting techniques of China and Japan, but also the history of it, because the beginnings of brush painting are all intertwined with Zen Buddhism and this incredibly spiritual approach to creating art, which was all about, you know, meditate. The monks would meditate before they made their paintings, and then they would create these very gestural, quick illustrations that captured the energy of the moment. And it philosophically, Chinese and Japanese painting is just a fascinating thing to explore. And I also read a book called The Art and Technique of Sumi-e Japanese Ink Painting by K. Morrissey Thompson, which was another beautiful exploration of Sumi-e, which is the Japanese tradition of ink painting. And another beautiful one that I read, which was really lovely, was The Tao of Watercolor, A Revolutionary Approach to the Practice of Painting by Jean Carbonetti. So there's sort of three books that I won't go into in detail here today, but all relating to that Chinese and Japanese approach to painting, which has really influenced the course that I've created, which is kind of a melding, actually, of Eastern and Western traditions, because I use a lot of Western paints, but I use a lot of Eastern brushes and a lot of Eastern philosophy in the way that I approach my watercolor work. So keep an eye out for Be Like Water, my new e-course coming out in a couple of months. And we're out of time, so I'm going to wrap it up there. I'll link to each of these books in the show notes. So go over and check out the show notes if you'd like to have a closer look at each of these and find where they are. And yeah, thanks for being with me today, and I will catch you next time. Bye. You can always see more of my art over at susannethercutt.com. And if you're interested in learning from me or checking out the podcast notes, you can find those over on susannethercuttstudio.com. I love hearing your comments and feedback, so feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, then why not snap a screenshot and share it in your Instagram stories? Be sure to tag me at susan.nethercutt so I can say hi. And if you've got a great idea for a future podcast episode or know someone who you think I should interview, then pop on over to susannethercuttstudio.com/podcast, hit the button in the header image to shoot me an email. Catch you next time.